Hello, this is Eat to the Beat. I'm Sarah Obritis, and we are, if you're listening to us, you're listening to us on heritageradionetwork.com, and we have a full house tonight here on Eat to the Beat, the place to hear about where food and farming cross over into the worlds of music, art, performance, and tonight, sport, and a little music and performance involved. We have San Francisco or Northern California on the line, and we have two folks from New York in the house, and on the line is Erie Greco. And is Jim with you, Erie?
He is, but he's not on the line. Should I put it on speaker?
Oh, if you'd like to join us. Anyway, Erie Greco and Jim Fryer have just launched a series called Peddling NYC, and they are both media moguls that put their heads together and came out with something pretty entertaining and at the very least captivating. And we have two of their stars. There's a series with Chris Jekyll, who's the chef at Morimoto.
How is everybody tonight?
And a great DJ, and he is also a serious cyclist. And we also have with us Behrouz Sharifi, who is the king of saffron to everyone out there. Maybe you'll recognize the name. And he is also an avid cycler who conducts business on the road and a lot more.
Hello,
on
everyone.
Two wheels. So Peddling New York has a lot of things that we all love to do, cycling, eating, foraging, that sort of thing, all wrapped up into one. So what was the purpose, and what's the future going to be like, Erie, with this series?
Well, I would say the inspiration was my sort of lifelong passion around food. I come from a chef background, similar to Chris's, and wound up getting into food media, working at Food Network and working on PBS cooking shows. And so, you know, I've definitely melded TV and filmmaking with food. And Jim, who is my business partner, normally, as well as with Peddling, comes from the cycling side, producing film around cycling events, and has filmed at the Tour de France and all over the world. So we just knew that there was something there, a really harmonious connection between the bike and the plate, and we wanted to create an original program that really showcased the two and brought them together and was entertaining and informative.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing more that symbolizes your a lifestyle than like taking your bike out on the road for routine or for, you know, for nothing or for everything. And so where do you, how, what is the, what's your, how are you getting the word out there, and what are the certain things other than, what are you wanting people to sort of, when they talk about Peddling NYC, what is the first thing that you want them to hone in on? And how are you getting the word out there?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. Well, for one thing, Peddling is a series, that we started for the first launch of it in New York City, but it is destined to be national and international in flavor. So the idea is to have taken what we filmed in New York and really bring it to different regions, whether it be wine country of California or, you know, following the Tour de France through the hillside of France, or being in Portland, Oregon, where bike culture and food culture are really melded into one. And for our viewers to come away from the experience of watching it, having tapped into things that they're passionate about, and really being able to enliven their curiosity about places they haven't discovered, foods they haven't tried, hidden gems, we like to say, of small producers, cheesemakers, winemakers, you know, people that are doing really creative things out there in the world of food and spirits, and to experience them by bike, you know, be healthy, be fit, be out there in the elements, be seeing the beautiful scenery, and, you know, paying a little attention to the environment and sort of sustainability while you're at it.
Yeah, the bike is like the best of, it's like walking and taking the bus, the best of both worlds. You get to move quickly, park, pop into places, and you're not like you're not on a bus, but you get to see it all, and it doesn't take you a whole lot of time to get around. So let's hear what, real briefly, where can folks see these clips that you guys have put together online?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is Jim here, and you can view the episodes at pedaling.tv as well as on our brand partners' websites, Whole Foods Market, Specialized Bicycles, and Bike New York. Mm-hmm. They all have the videos on their sites embedded as well.
Okay, dynamite. Yeah, Jim, you have a lot of hardcore professional cycling shots, I noticed, mixed in with some of these foodie stories on food foragers.
Yeah, it's just a great mix of the two. I mean, we experience, as you know, as a former professional cyclist and, you know, being on the bike for 25 plus years of my life, food is always integrated into the experience wherever we travel, wherever we're riding our bikes, and it just seems like this pedaling is really a natural extension of that real life experience. And now, you know, through pedaling in the show, we can share that experience with people around the world.
Well, maybe towards the end of our half hour here, we can hear about, since you have been on the hardcore extreme side of things, a little bit about how hardcore cyclists fuel up, and what are some of the absurdities, the tricks of the trade, some of the things that you guys do, and not just if there's anything, you know, sort of anecdotal or sort of wild that you've noticed team of cyclists crave for after or before a big race.
Sure. Absolutely.
I think I'll take a second and to go to a more of an amateur or a someone who, Beirush, let's start with your day out there pedaling, your wares, your business, your bike. Let's start with what you do for a living.
Well, this is Beirush, Saffron King. And for the past 7-8 years, I've been peddling my wares all through New York City and a number of other cities across America. I do everything during the day by bicycle. And I made this decision years ago when I began my business as just plain common sense and pure fun. I like to ride my bicycle. And living in this great city of New York, it just occurred to me as the best way to do what I do. And it also seemed counterintuitive. Chefs were becoming more and more interested in local artisanal products. Well, my products come from the other side of the world, but I just figured it makes sense to complete the delivery by bike. It's the best way to get around, and it's personalized. And the long and short of it is there was no real decision or motivation on my part other than it just made sense. But as the years have gone by, I've noticed, especially in media pieces, it seems to be of great interest that I do what I do by bicycle. And I think that speaks to the fact that we're becoming, as a society, more interested in sustainable means of living, not just, you know, the food that we eat and the energy that we consume, but bicycling, I think it's something that we all do with children. Many of us then stop, but for me, I've never stopped riding, and I can't imagine doing what I do any other way. It's the access that I have, my ability to navigate New York City streets. I do my best to employ the bike lanes and ride safely, but I do have a wild side, and I enjoy that to the full. So just being on the bicycle is such a great way to engage in the city, and also feel really enlivened and thrilled to the core to be able to tap into what is at the same time an ancient pursuit, but with a little modern edge. Riding in the city, it just made sense to me, and it's worked out well.
And you can't ask for a more conducive product to cart around. You can pack those spices into the tiniest containers, put them on your back, put them on your bike rack, and head out.
I have some phenomenal waterproof panniers. I've always said if there's an apocalypse, the first thing I'd grab is my bike and my panniers. They're truly waterproof. I can carry maybe 25, 30 pounds in each pannier, and then with another sack on the back of the rack, I can transport, you know, literally 50, 60, 70 pounds of spices, which is a lot. I'm not dealing with fresh produce or, you know, meat and fish or, you know, bottled or tinned products. So anyway, the first 5 years when I only had saffron, I didn't even need panniers. A little satchel would do, and I would make my way around town, and people were always wondering, what's that long-haired fellow doing jumping on and off his bikes, and what have you got in his little bag?
Long hair, long beard.
Can't imagine what people were wondering.
Oh my goodness. With smells wafting out of the back tire. So, and we want to get back to the core of your business, how you got started, and your sources, your spices, and all that. But for a moment, we'll move to Chris Jekyll, who is a chef extraordinaire now at Morimoto, but who has, actually used your spices extensively at Tabla, which is the perfect, I'm sure, in the perfect spot.
Yeah,
for
initially we
the
saw
King
them there,
of Saffron.
But I think we really developed a relationship at Madison Park with the saffron for a few years, and then when he contacted me after I moved to Morimoto, of course I figured out a way to incorporate him to our system there.
And then how did you guys meet up? How did Erie and Jim get word that you guys were conducting most of your lives or ruling the streets on your bikes?
Erie found me on Facebook.
Nice.
Yeah, I got a random email like, "Hey, Chris, I think we've met before. You look familiar. I see you ride your bike. We should talk sometime." And this was almost a year ago, maybe, right, Erie?
Yeah. It was, I think, it was about March of last year. Mm-hmm. I had just come back from California filming the Tour of California, and so I obviously had cycling on the brain. And I think that Chris and I had met through sort of the Iron Chef America Morimoto connection, you know, in passing, and saw him on Facebook and knew that he posted a lot about cycling, as well as, you know, knew that he worked as a chef. So wasn't quite sure where we were taking pedaling yet. We hadn't started filming it, but I, you know, just reached out to him and we met for a drink at Pegu Club, which is a perfect place to mull over any kind of foodie ideas. And it just seemed like a natural fit. And then, just for Baruch, I had filmed with him about a year and a half ago, I think, Baruch. And obviously, incredible personality, very unique character. His spices are, you know, unparalleled in quality, and he does his business entirely by bike. So for us, for Jim and I, we only want to feature authentic characters that are out there really riding their bike, really passionate, and really passionate about food. So we're not getting actors, you know, to play the part, but that these are real life people out there, and we're just giving them an opportunity to showcase what they normally do in their mm-hmm. everyday lives.
And when we come back after a small musical break, Jim, I want to know what you think of if New York riders have a special je ne sais quoi, if we have a special, if we're a little bit more wilder, if we have a different sort of attitude towards biking than you've noticed around the world, or at least out on the West Coast, if there's anything that stands out, because I know you started your project over here. So we'll come back and talk about New York riding and get Jim's sense of that.
Sounds good.
Hello. It's Eat to the Beat. I'm Sarah. We're on Heritage Radio Network. We're sponsored by Never to Forget to mention our sponsors, TechServe, who have been huge supporters and really got us going here at the station. And we have in the house Erie Greco, who is not in the house but on the line, with Jim Fryer, who have started Pedaling NYC. And we have the peddlers extraordinaire, Chris Jekyll, chef at Morimoto, and Baruch Sharifi, King of Saffron, who cruised New York, and who are both individually stars on two separate pieces that Pedaling NYC came out with. And so, Jim, I just wanted to follow up with you and get a sense of what you if New York is a unique place, but is there something immediately that stands out from a cycling perspective, or sort of we have all sorts of different versions of cycling off ramps and off and racing down the road in sort of your normal garb, but I wondered what what impression you got of our cycling culture out here.
Sure, sure. Well, the first and foremost, you know, I think most avid cyclists and, you know, people that are riding on the road, even competing, when you mention New York City and riding in Manhattan, the automatic response is, well, that's impossible. There's too many cars, the traffic's too congested, and so forth. The thing I saw right off the bat is how many cyclists are actually on the road. It was pretty astounding. And as we started filming and making our way around New York City from, you know, Soho, you know, towards the Upper West Side and around Central Park, is that the city has done a great job, along with Bike New York, to really create a great corridor of riding opportunities, you know, with great painted bike lanes. So it's really smooth, it's easy. The bikes are actually protected in a way. And there's more acknowledgement from motorists, and there's a better balance on the roads, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the most surprising and exciting thing I saw. You know, and as we had our road cyclists and out there around Manhattan, it was amazing to see how easy it was for them to ride and how much fun they were having. There were genuine smiles on their faces as they were riding through the streets of New York City, which is just really, really cool to see. I mean, it was so exciting, and it just made it feel like this is a natural place to ride your bike. And we, you know, we saw it on Baruch's face, we saw it on Chris's face, and our road cyclist Meredith and her guest Joan. They were just having so much fun riding their bikes in New York City, which, you know, again, if you went outside the city walls and talked to anybody about riding a road bike in New York City, they would probably have a different opinion. But once you actually see it in real life, it's great. And I think pedaling did a great job of really showing how easy and fun it really is to ride your bike in New York.
Yeah, no, in action, it is. They took their cues from Montreal, I think, and many other places in the world that sort of push out the cars, make some space in between the cars and the sidewalk, creating a safer place for pedestrians also.
I agree. I also think the energy in New York City kind of translates into the bicycle very well. I think the energy of the people walking the streets and the cars moving really kind of reverberates through your body as you ride your bicycle, and you find yourself really enjoying the experience, and even sometimes riding in the middle of traffic and things and almost feeling safer in that way. It's just a way that the energy of New York really infuses into people, different than a lot of other ways.
But for the things that could go wrong on the ride, and when you just don't have time to get in trouble over a pothole, or, you know, some sort of breakdown, do you carry gear with you that will help fix a flat? Because, I mean, the city may have improved in so many other ways, but, man, those potholes are deep and
It's true. The roads have definitely gotten better, but you have to carry a fix-a kit with you. You have to. You carry a tube, tire pulls. I have an instant flate that's very small. I put it on a little pouch underneath my seat, and I don't leave my house without it.
Do you have Band-Aids like that, Baruch?
I have to say, I've seen Chris's set up and his gadgets extraordinaire, and I fail miserably by comparison. But that said, I have my little phone with my GPS, and a few times I have a breakdown, I seem to find a bike shop in close proximity, and I've got a great bike shop right by my house, which I frequent on a regular basis. But just to add one thing, before I moved into the city over 23 years ago, I was more of a mountain bike rider at the time, and I distinctly remember some good friends. They were telling me, oh, when you get to New York City, you're going to have to ride your bike in Central Park, and they were trying to give me some clues as to where to ride, and I just looked at them, and I was entirely skeptical. I just thought, no way am I going to ride in the city. Then, of course, I arrived and then jumped on a bike, and then ever since, yes, you know, there are numerous problems associated with riding in New York City. But in general, as I say with New York, it's a hard place to live. For everything that you might find that you don't like about New York, mm-hmm. I like to say there's twice as many things that you do like, and that obviously weighs out. But you know, for me, you know, the potholes are being doored. You know, you have to, you know, be very aware of cab doors popping open, because that's a painful way to interrupt your day.
Totally.
I've had some bikes stolen, but the last quick anecdote for me, I recently had a bike stolen, and a few months later I saw my bike going past me on the street, and quick pursuit.
How did you know it was your bike?
Well, I identified it almost 100% just by seeing it.
It didn't have a bag of spices on the back, did it?
It did not, but I ran as best I could. I wasn't in the best of shape at the time, and I caught up and I noticed, you know, some of the accessories I'd put on the bike myself. It was definitely mine, so a little wrestle ensued, and the onlookers, I'm sure, thought,
well, what was the black market? They pilfered it off of what a bike rack?
It was in front of a bar restaurant that I frequent. Maybe I've been 1,000 times the past 20 years. Locked my bike up the same place. I watched the English soccer there, and in broad daylight, it was locked. Big heavy duty lock came out. The bike wasn't there. And 3 months later, I was repatriated with my bike. I actually did call the police to see if they could come and help me. When I was on the phone waiting for the police, I decided that, that some vigilante law was called for. I took the situation to my own hands and took my bike and rode off. And I'm sure that onlookers thought that I was the aggressor in the situation. But boy, did I feel vindicated, and I had a
right on.
Big it's amazing smile. How efficient thieves are in New York City. I left a bike out in front of Bed Bath & Beyond on 17th Street and 6th Avenue for 15 minutes. I came back, bike was gone, lock was gone, no sign of everything. 15 minutes, broad daylight.
Like, so how are they cutting into that lock?
You know, this was at a time when there was rumors about warming a plastic pen and shoving it into the old lock and being able to turn it, so that's possible.
Crafting.
But again, I don't know for sure, but I can assume that was possibly the way, because mm-hmm. It was a big chain. It was not an easily cut chain.
So now that you work days mostly, Chris, mm-hmm. specializing becoming expert in sushi rice and soy sauce and all the wonderful basics of fundamentals of Japanese food, are do you just cruise like all night long, or did it turn upside down your cycling routine?
No, actually, I enjoy doing distances most after work. So regardless of when I'm working days or nights, I would go for rides quite often. And truthfully, Central Park at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning is an amazing experience, because there's nobody on the road, there's nobody in the way, there's no cars, there's nothing. It's just freedom. You can just ride and do lap after lap and have very few people there to bother you. And it really, it's one of the only places I feel comfortable with my headphones on, especially late at night, where you can put them on and really just be in the moment and enjoy it. So I wouldn't say I ride more now that I work during the day, but I ride differently.
Mm-hmm.
And now on my days, I'll either take West Side Highway or I'll go up into New Jersey, where it's not quite as congested if I really want to do the distances.
Is there a continuous lap around the island?
Or no, there's not.
There's not.
The city's working towards it, but the northeastern region especially seems to end, and you end up having to get on some streets and things before you get back into the loop. I know the city is working, but I don't think they'll ever be able to get the very top section of Manhattan to loop in.
So what are, do you have a super far-flung destination for food and fueling that you've hopped on your bike to go after?
There's a few things that I do. I wouldn't say huge distances. I do ride to my mom's house out on Long Island quite often. But to eat in particular, I go up to the ball fields in the northern eastern region, Dykeman Fields, and I get some tacos there.
Do they have stands that rival Red Hook's?
They're good. Yeah. They are very good. There's cracklings involved. There's pork. There's pickled jalapenos. There's all the accoutrements you could possibly want.
And up there is hilly and steep, and you get a good ride.
Yes, it's true, and it's also quite a long distance from where I live. When I do the loop all the way around the lower Manhattan and all the way up, I'm putting 10, 15 miles minimum just to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So that one in particular is one thing that I touch on. I also tend to, if I do long rides into Jersey, on my way back down, I'll stop at several points. And truthfully have a beer at each point. We kind of do the West Coast pub crawl, I guess, at each outdoor bar in the morning, like in the Sundays in the summertime, which we enjoy very much. It kind of mellows us out, enjoys the last few miles of our ride, calms us down. You go home, you take a nice solid power nap, wake up feeling great.
So speaking of beers, when do you say when? Have you ever? I mean, are you out there sometimes and you just had way too much to drink and you're like, I can't ride home?
Well, if I may excuse myself.
And what do you do?
Having grown up in England, where the drinking culture obviously runs very deep with pubs and such, going from pub to pub, pub crawls I very often accomplished on bicycle. And basically riding through fields late at night, sounds like a recipe for disaster. But I ran into a few fences and some lampposts here and there, but nothing untoward.
I did notice pedaling NYC makes you all wear helmets. I don't know if you did before.
I always wear a helmet. Right. My wife does. I have an 8-year daughter, and if she's listening, you always wear your helmet, absolutely. Nice. Whether you're riding in a field or whether you're riding on the streets, it just makes no sense not to.
If I can add a story here, I had one night, and I remember the night, surprisingly. I definitely had too many, and I decided I'd at least unlock and try, and I got about half a block away, and I'm in Manhattan, so not a good idea to be riding in the state. And I get about half a block away, and I kind of fall off. Don't completely fall off, but I kind of fall off. And I'm like, all right. I put my I clip back in, and I get another like quarter of a block, and the same thing kind of happens. I lean on the car, and I carry a fix-it kit with me. So I was just like, this is not a good idea. So I took my wheels off. I put my bike on my shoulder. I hailed a taxi. I put the bike with the two taken-off wheels in the trunk and took a cab home.
Well, for those who didn't know, you were bombed. I guess they might have thought you were wimping out. But right. I do want to pay attention a little bit more to the King of Saffron's business. I don't think that we covered it all. So your spices run the gamut. They come from a particular region, or what's the most exciting bit of your business?
Well, as you can tell by my deeply Middle Eastern accent, I'm actually Iranian. I was born in Iran, raised in England, moved to sunny Arkansas at the tender age of 14, and I've been in New York City for 23 years. We're passionate about our saffron in Iran. We use more saffron than any other country. My daughter's name, she's 8 years old, Saffron Rain. So obviously, and I did work in the fine food industry years ago. For many years wanted to bring a much better quality of saffron into the country than I thought was generally available. Most all of the saffron that's generically available is of a very mediocre quality, shall we say. So I started this, and for 5 years I sold only saffron, and that was my foot in the door, and I basically learned to love what I do, and learning the whole process and learning a lot about the industry. And the last 2 years we've now added, I think we have close to 80 different spices, fruits, flowers, peppers and resins. These are all dried, non-perishable, and that was a very conscious decision on our part. And of course,
from Iran and its neighbors.
Primarily from Iran. Most everything is sourced from Iran. Iran, of course, through history, with its proximity geographically to India and to China and the Silk Route and the spice routes, both overland and oversea, Iran has played a crucial role. And I think we can learn so much about ourselves by studying historically the movement and the commerce of these goods from point A to point B. It tells you not just about the commercial aspect, but more about the cultural exchange. And I think that speaks a lot to and the cuisines of every nation. Spanish food isn't just about a certain border, a national border. It's the influences that have seeped into Spain over countless centuries through exploits and conquered, being invaded, invading, and such. But anyway, I think to answer your question specifically, we carry pretty much all of the commonly known and used spices, cinnamon, like cardamom, ginger and such. But we also go out of our way to source some pretty peculiar items. I think we sell maybe 12 items. I don't, to the best of my knowledge, see being made available anywhere else in America. I'll just quickly mention one of them, manna. It's a resin that's collected from these bushes, a manna from heaven, the biblical reference. The book of Exodus in the Old Testament tells you about the Israelites. They were starving. They prayed for food, for help, and divine intervention sent food from the heavens. Actually, this manna, this resin, they used to sweeten their unleavened bread. It's very interesting because in the countries that produce this resin, and it's a PhD discussion as to what is manna and what is not manna, but manna is used as a natural antibiotic to reduce fever in children. It has an incredible cooling property. It's a crystal-like substance. I've got two different kinds. One tastes like maple or caramel. And anyway, for those with a literary background, the word still has some cachet. But I think it's really interesting because we don't really cook with manna. And I know in Italy, for instance, I've heard from some Italian chefs I work with, there's a flowering ash in Italy that produces manna, and they also use it as a natural antibiotic. So it's a challenge for chefs to integrate these sorts of products into their dishes. And chefs, upon tasting it and sampling it, they were interested in the texture and the flavor, as I was, and I thought pastry chefs would use this to finish desserts. But chefs would say, okay, Bruce, this is wonderful, but what the heck do we do with it? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, that's for you to figure out. And And it's wonderful because my items are used for sweet, savory, and also for drinks. More and more restaurants are using my stuff in their drinks program. And Wiley at WD50 was the first to use the manna, sprinkling it on foie gras and on raw fish. And that's very exciting for me to essentially bring something that chefs are unfamiliar with, and within a short period of time, they find their way onto plates.
Yeah, totally intense industry. What are you using at Morimoto?
We use a mix of his spices, coriander, pretty much a lot of the basic items, black cumin, Lucknow fennel seed, green cardamom, rose petal, a few cinnamon stick. His cinnamon is extremely nice. His paprika is maybe the best paprika I've ever seen. Really bright red, exceptional quality. Things along those lines.
Well, this... this makes for a whole nother show or radio series. Forget online video. Do radio. No, we do have to sign off with our crew out on the West Coast, Erie Greco and Jim Fryer, who have launched Peddling NYC. And we had Behrouz Sharifi here, King of Saffron, talking about spices. And I'm sorry we didn't get to hear about storing them and finding fresh spices and that sort of thing. But it does spawn ideas for another show. And Chris Jekyll, who is also another cyclist in the series Peddling NYC, as is Behrouz, who is chef at Morimoto. So we will sign off our series of Eat to the Beat here on Heritage Radio Network. Thank you all for listening.